Well, we all know that case studies are a key tool for physicians, and today we'll meet several different patients dealing with pain who were treated with opioid therapy. The first will demonstrate the burden of inadequately treated pain. We had the opportunity to meet Shane, a 33-year-old former police officer and father of four, who was denied treatment despite his chronic pain.
I was a police officer since I was 21.
My old home here, huh?
Yep.
My father was a police officer. I guess it was kind of in my blood. It's something I always wanted to do. And then I was injured back about 07.
47, 20 rounds.
It was one night, myself and another officer were going to a call. It was at a bar fight. This guy attacked me and the other officer. I went backwards. I just remember there being a lot of pain. I actually had no idea for about 2 months. I was going around with a broken back. This injury completely changed my life. There was just severe pain constantly, and most of all, ended a career that I loved doing. The pain is always there. It's always stabbing. We've tried all kinds of stuff. We've tried anti-inflammatory medications, opiate-type medications, muscle relaxers. My doctor called me the model patient, probably because I never wanted to be in something too strong, just something that worked. That was all I needed. And then a doctor took me off of all medications. He told me that it was because I had a family member that had abused medication or drugs. And so that it would, you know, it would kind of be in my DNA, I guess, to do the same thing. Now, I've never misused my pain medication, and I couldn't believe it. I was stunned. In fact, I had just had surgery a few months before that, and now I have several screws and rods in my back. I've had a total of 13 spine surgeries, and in fact, getting ready for my 14th.
Go ahead and lay on your side.
And I wasn't being treated anymore with those medications to help relieve that, so instead I had just suffered. I thought for sure that I was labeled, and I would never be able to see another doctor again. Sometimes people don't want to touch you when you're taking any type of opiate medications. I did find one. However, it wasn't in the state, and it cost me. I spent literally thousands of dollars. Every few months, I'd fly down to see this doctor. It took a long time to find a doctor in my state.
Thank you. I don't think they gave him a fair shake. It's a very common problem.
Everybody's leaded. We're gonna shoot some x-ray here.
There are a lot of misperceptions about chronic pain patients.
It's a nice image of the cages you've got, Shane.
These patients need somebody that's going to genuinely care for them over the long term.
So this is a primary source of your pain, right?
Yeah.
At the base.
Yeah.
How far can you go to touch your toes?
Patients can be effectively managed in part with opioids. Opioids aren't a treatment in and of themselves that should be used as a single modality, but in the context of a comprehensive pain management program, patients can do very well with opioids.
So your medications are working well for you?
Yes, they're working good. Luckily, I have a great doctor now. He titrated me to the right dose, and to this day, I haven't changed that dose.
Let me know if it causes you any problems.
And that's been now, you know, over a year. I'm on three different types of medications. One's a long-acting medication. I have a breakthrough medication, and I take a muscle relaxer as well.
Hey, our flowers are coming in.
The doctors have told me that there won't be anything that will ever cure this pain, but with the help of my doctor, I'll make it.
Hey, Jake.
Did I put him in the dirt?
Yeah.
I'm disabled, so I'm at home a lot with the kids. All of my kids are real close. They like to play ball. We'll toss around out there at the park. This is the life I have now, and I gotta live this way.
Oh, almost.
I can't be a police officer anymore, but I still have my kids to live for, my wife to live for. Kind of look on the bright side of things.
Give me a high five, because we did a good job. Yeah.
There are many subjects that we could discuss regarding Shane's situation. I'll focus on just one that stands out in my mind, and that is risk stratification and how to respond and weigh the benefits and risks when you determine that somebody might be at higher risk for developing a problem with addiction, abuse, misuse, or diversion. Shane, on the basis of the fact that he has a family history of substance abuse, he's automatically placed in a moderate risk category if there are three categories, low, moderate, and high. And so that means he may require a little extra attention. He may require extra education. He may require increased monitoring, surveillance. But I think he's a very good candidate, it's very clear, for long-term opioid therapy. And a physician would be remiss, I think, hearing this story to not want to take a chance on Shane, even though there is a moderate risk of him developing a problem with addiction. Patients who have risk factors, have objective evidence of a painful disorder, and have exhausted every other therapy. And the only therapy that's likely to help reduce their pain, improve their quality of life, prevent them from becoming depressed, maybe help them get back to work, is opioid therapy.
You know, Gil said that this is bread and butter for the pain specialist, and I would like to make the plea this really should be a primary care patient. Most patients who have pain in the United States don't have access to a pain specialist, either because geographically they're not around an area. You take a number of 65 million Americans have chronic pain, and there's only 6,000 pain specialists in America. That number requires that primary care take up the major portion of care for these patients. And Shane is a good example of that. He's somebody that he said he doesn't want a strong medicine, just something that's going to help him. He realizes he's not going to return to work where he had a pretty physical type of job. He just wanted some pain relief. He looks like, although we don't have the whole story, that he was taking medication appropriately. This is primary care. This should be a patient that may go to a pain specialist for a while, get their medication on a stable track, and then come back, and we, primary care, should be handling this particular type of patient.
So just how prevalent is the abuse of prescription opioids?
It's extremely common. Nat Katz and I did a study approximately 6 or 7 years ago at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center and at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and we showed that almost half of our patients exhibited behaviors consistent with addiction, abuse, misuse, or diversion, or had urine toxicology results inconsistent with reported use of drugs. The number of emergency room visits has increased dramatically. Between 2004 and 2008, there were approximately 500,000 emergency room visits for prescription drug overdoses. And in 2008, that number is up to almost 1 million. Roger Sakala, who is a pain specialist from the Southeast, has estimated that 25%, based on some data, that 25% of prescription opioids are diverted. There are studies that show that one out of three teenagers has a close friend who he or she knows abuses prescription drugs.
Just how are these patients typically getting a hold of these opioids to use non-medically?
Well, we would think that they're getting them on the internet. We would think that they're coming from street use. That's what the common myth is, that people are getting these drugs from sources that are illegal or profitable in some way. In reality, what we find is that most patients are getting these drugs from family and friends is the most common source. That doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. It shouldn't be done, but it would be kind of like a mother giving her daughter some of her medication when she has a menstrual cramp, not thinking that's inappropriate. It is inappropriate. These are very hazardous drugs. They shouldn't be used without the risk-benefit that the mother can't do. But people are using them. They'll let friends borrow their, I've got some medicine at home, I'll give you one. That's the most common source. And the second most common source is from one doctor. So a doctor gives it to a patient. The patient doesn't use it as appropriately prescribed, and that's another source. So despite our myth that these are all coming from the internet or a street source, they aren't. They're coming from family and friends predominantly, which means we need to educate families about how to use these drugs, not have them available, not have them in the medicine cabinet where somebody can get a hold of them inappropriately.
Let's be clear, though, that a lot of this medicine is placed in the medicine cabinet because they may have had surgery or dental work, and they've used only a small portion of the prescribed amount of their medicine, and it sits there. And it can sit there for weeks, months, or years until the kids and the kids' friends or neighbors or guests come into the home and go into the bathroom where most often the medicine is kept. And it is pilfered at that time. So when we talk about coming from our from one physician or from our family and friends, it's really that through the vehicle, then it's taken out and usually consumed, not necessarily sold at that point.